Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of the In No Hurry podcast. This is your host, Cole Douglas Claiborne. So happy to be back with you again this week for a new episode. Thank you for taking some time out of your week to listen to this podcast. If you've listened before and you've enjoyed this show, I would greatly appreciate if you would take the time to leave a short review on Apple Podcasts. It really does help other people find this show and know if this is a show that they might enjoy. And also, word of mouth, sharing it with your friends, your family that you think might be interested, that goes a long way. So as you know by the name of this podcast, the purpose here is to focus on living an unhurried life in this culture that tells us the more we do, the more we hustle, the more valuable and worthwhile we are. And it is just a culture that does not celebrate rest, does not celebrate taking time off. It is how much can you do, how much can you produce, and it is just an exhausting life. And last week's episode with Adam Ramsey, if you've not listened to that, I highly encourage you to listen to that episode in addition to this week, because the topics are so intertwined. Both conversations are perfect for this podcast. My guest this week is another author. His name is Di Hanke. He's the author of a book called Hope Word, Gospel Grace for Weary Souls. And again, we just talk about what does it mean to rest? What does it mean to slow down and not be in a hurry? And what I love about Di and his approach is, one, he's from Wales, so this is 2 weeks in a row we've had awesome accents, which is just great. But secondly, he is so authentic. He basically is like, he's a pastor, but he's like, I'm just kind of a guy, and I make mistakes, I'm not perfect, and I don't have all the answers, but this is just what's worked for me. And I really appreciate just his genuine, authentic approach, both in this conversation and in his book. So I think you guys are going to really like this. It just feels like there's a lot of stuff that is being said lately about the need to slow down, the need to avoid hustle. And I think it's just a message that we really need to hear, especially as we enter into the last few months of the year. You've got Thanksgiving, Christmas, the holidays at the end of the year, that there's just so much to do and it gets so busy. And I think it's just important that we take time to slow down and be with friends, be with family, be with loved ones, and just make sure that we are not allowing ourselves to go too much and just have some time to relax. So, hope you guys will enjoy this conversation. This is Di Hanke, author of Hope Word, Gospel Grace for Weary Souls. Thanks for tuning in. Well, Di, I'm super excited to talk with you. This is 2 weeks in a row on my show that I've had guests with awesome accents. I had Adam Ramsey down in Australia, and I've got you today up in Wales. How's it going, man? Excited to have you on the show.
Yeah, it's going good. Thank you very much. Yeah. It's not quite as exotic an accent as Adam's is. You know, Australian accent is, way more cool than the Welsh accent, I think. But it is what it is.
Yeah, we're getting a double dose of great accents here. But I'm super excited to talk with you about this book, Hope Word, Gospel Grace for Weary Souls. We'll get into that in a second. But we were just talking about you're a soccer fan. You live in Wales. What is life like there? I've only been to England whenever I flew back through Germany. I was in Germany, Austria, Switzerland, and France this summer. We flew back through Heathrow. And so I've only been in that area, the United Kingdom, for that very reason. So I've not gotten to spend any time there. So what is life like there in September? Is the weather cool? Is it hot? Rainy?
We're just setting in for autumn now. In fact, we just had a weather warning that the first of the autumn stroke winter storms are sweeping in off the Atlantic today. So Storm Agnes is about to hit us. Okay. But you know, it's just a little bit cooler. August was a bit wet, but June and July were pretty hot. But the autumn's kicking in, the leaves are starting to change. You know, we have all four seasons in the UK. Here in Wales, don't get as much snow down the south where I am as I'd like, but you know, autumn's always awesome in this part of the world.
That's
for sure.
Great. And I'm a big sports fan, and one of my bucket list items is to go to some European soccer games at some point. I was hoping to make that part of my trip this summer, but we just didn't have time. But what is that culture like? I mean, is it as awesome as it seems from afar, where it's just like each team, I mean, every the fans of each team, like you're just so into that team and the energy is awesome at the games?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like European football generally, and we're bonkers in Europe, but South America is another yeah. league again, as far as the craziness of the fans goes. But interestingly, in Wales, where I live, like this nation in the UK, football or soccer, as you guys call it, is pretty big. But the massive sport here is rugby.
Okay.
So rugby is almost a religion in Wales. So England, Wales, and Scotland. So England, Ireland, and Scotland would have kind of football would be pretty high up there. Ireland's got Gaelic football as well.
Okay.
But Wales, it's all about the rugby, you know. So right now it's the Rugby World Cup, and so there's pretty exciting things happening with Wales just being the first ones to reach the quarterfinals of the Rugby World Cup. So football fans are passionate in the UK, but Welsh rugby fans like incredibly so. In fact, if you do a tour of European soccer events, make sure you do it at a time where you can take in a Welsh rugby match. The singing will blow your mind. Trust me.
Okay. That's good to know. All right. Well, talk to me about this book, Hope Word. How did this idea come about? I think you mentioned on the back here or somewhere I read this was written out of a season of burnout for you too. I forget where I read that, but I was doing some research on this book and I assumed that was kind of the case, but what was the impetus for this book? How did this idea come to you?
Yeah, so the Good Book Company have published a few of my books in the past, and they'd asked me to consider writing a book to encourage Christians not to quit. So I don't know if I've got some kind of a reputation as a motivational speaker kind of, you know, I don't know, like I guess people find my preaching and my writing quite encouraging. So I was asked to consider writing a book on don't quit. But they asked me to write it during the kind of the COVID season. Mm-hmm. And by the time I got to sitting down and trying to write it towards the end of 2020, I was actually in a really bad season. I think there was a perfect storm of different things that happened during 2020, COVID being one of them. But the effect that COVID had on, you know, obviously I was leading a church, and for a big chunk of that, my co-pastor was out of country. So I was leading it on my own. I also run a business with a friend of mine, and he was out of country, so both of those guys got stuck, one in Uganda, one in the US. So I had to kind of manage the business during COVID as well for quite a few months, and you know, there'd been some other bits and pieces around that had been really difficult emotionally anyway. And so I think by the time I got to the end of 2020, I was probably in a much darker and a much bleaker place than I realized. You know, I had a moment, you know, probably around the October time in at the end of 2020, where I was just flat on my back in my bedroom thinking, I think I'm pretty much done. I don't think I've got anything left in the tank. I've got nothing left to offer, nothing left to give. So they'd asked me to write some kind of a sample chapter for this idea on a book called Don't Quit. Don't Quit was a working title for a long time.
Okay.
And so I wrote what I think is either the intro or the first chapter, whatever the bleakest part of Hopewood is anyway. I wrote this chapter and I sent it to the lady who I was working with, and she just read it and she said, "Di, I think you probably need to stop writing and go and get some help, because you're clearly not in a very good place." And, you know, and I wasn't, you know, I was in a really dark place, you know, not suicidal, but pretty much done with life, feeling that, you know, I've lived a very full life. I've lived a very kind of crazy life earlier in my life. And I feel like I'd lived two or three lifetimes by the time I'd hit, you know, 2020. And I felt I had nothing left. I was spent. Midlife, it might have mugged me as well. You know, all the kind of politics around COVID really messed with my head as well. And I was just like, I was just done. So I just needed some time out at the end of 2020. I think then when I kind of finally caught my breath some point in the middle of 2021, I probably picked up the pen again. Well, the proverbial pen, opened my right. laptop is more true for me,
right.
and just started writing again. And some of those things that had helped me to get, you know, a little bit of perspective, and that was still helping me, to be honest, get a little bit of perspective, you know, took the shape of the kind of rest of the book. And I guess it kind of took the shape of, you know, the first chapter is all about how I crumpled, and the, mm-hmm. and the rest of it was like, well, if I want to start running the race again, how do I go from a crumpled mess, you know, just with nothing left to give, to like being back in the race and, you know, not resenting the race. And so it's kind of the kind of language of a Hopewood trajectory sort of came out in the writing, that, you know, you go from sort of like, you know, crumpling to, you know, just coming to Jesus, receiving his grace, abiding in him. And it's kind of a process all the way through to, you know, walking with him and then running again. So that was kind of where it came from. But, you know, it wasn't really a kind of, hey, I've had this difficult season, I should write a book about it. It's like, I've already been asked to write a book about not quitting. I want to quit right now. So maybe I shouldn't write it. And then when I finally had quit, I guess it kind of took a different form to what they'd originally asked me to do, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's especially pertinent because you are a pastor and you're a Christian and you're not immune to these feelings. And I think there's a couple of emotions that I know I've dealt with whenever I have experienced similar seasons, and other people that I've talked to have said the same thing, where it's almost like you feel guilty whenever you're in that season of like, well, I'm a Christian, I shouldn't feel this burnt out. But it's, I mean, it doesn't matter who you are. Like, life is going to happen. And we've gone through a lot in the last 3 years, 4 years, I guess, if you want to date back to, I guess, late 2019 when COVID was starting to really show its ugly head. But the pandemic was awful for a lot of people. And then here in the United States, we had all kinds of political strife. We had civil unrest. We had all kinds of stuff over the last few years, a very contentious presidential election. And it's just hard. And I was a high school teacher for two of those years. And I saw the effect it had on teenagers and even on teachers, on adults and their parents. And so everybody felt that burnout. And so what you talked about, how, you know, you came out of it, and I'm sure there's seasons where you feel burnt out too still, but just that process, I think what I would like to hear is it was not an overnight process, I assume. So the question that I'm getting at is, it does take patience to get out of seasons like that. It takes patience to see things just change. And that was something when I talked with Adam, you know, this conversation, I think, overlaps in a really good way with the one that I had with him. But he talked about just how it's very difficult for us to wait. And one of the things he said was, a lot of times his prayer is, Lord, give me patience now, which is like a very funny oxymoron. But that's kind of how we approach it. So in terms of just the patience and the time and the process that it took to get out of those emotions, what encouragement would you give to somebody who's in that to say, like, yes, it may not happen tomorrow, but just trust in God, it does happen?
Yeah, I mean, there's a verse which has always meant a lot to me, if I'm honest with you, but it's always meant a lot to me as a preacher to tell this to other people rather than to apply it to myself. That's James 4:6, where it says, God opposes the proud, he gives grace to the humble. And I think sometimes we need to be humble under the mighty hand of God. I think that all sorts of circumstances can bring that about. And people who are in ministry, especially, more often than not, they're in ministry because they are proactive people. They want to serve, they want to do, they want to serve Jesus for sure. They want to love the lost and love their flock or love the communities that they're trying to reach. But generally speaking, if you're the kind of person that is an activist, that you're a doer, you're a servant, you kind of get your joy and you get your energy out of serving. And when you can't serve, that's difficult. And that's what COVID did to a lot of people. It stopped us all in our tracks. And that was difficult for a lot of people in different ways. But I just think that, like, what one of the things which I think comes out quite clearly in the book, as one of the sort of central themes, really, is that ultimately the gospel is not about what we do for Christ, it's what Christ has done for us. And there's nothing that we do in our striving and nothing that we do in our serving or our ministering, our preaching, our teaching, our pastoring, our writing, anything like that. Nothing we do adds anything to what Christ has done.
Right.
And I think it's sometimes when we allow ourselves to believe that what we are doing and that our very lives, our very ministries are somehow, you know, doing God a favor and the world a favor, and therefore we are in some way indispensable, that the Lord's like, no, you've got it wrong. You need to receive my grace and then abide in my grace. You don't sort of like take the grace, take my refreshment, and then go on and do it all in your own strength again. We're saved by grace, but also sustained by grace. And, you know, the Christian life is ultimately not about striving, but abiding. I mean, we do strive, but with the power with which he powerfully works in us, as it says in Colossians, you know, it's not about our energy and our achievements and our attainments. And I think that when you finally, and I think I genuinely have believed that now after 31 years of trying to be a Christian, I think I've genuinely got to a place now where I'm like, you know, nothing's going to change who I am in Christ. Nothing's going to, even if my ministry falls apart, even if my, you know, my life falls apart, even if I, you know, my name is mud, whatever happens, it's not ultimately going to undo the finished work of Christ. Mm-hmm. And learning to rest there and to dwell in that truth has been a challenge. And, you know, I still love doing stuff for Jesus, and I still am a proactive and productive person. Mm-hmm. But I think that the kind of the stakes are a lot less now. I genuinely care a lot less what people think about me, care a lot less about, you know, whether, I mean, this sounds terrible. I'm here, I am on this podcast, right? It doesn't matter whether this book is it sells loads or not. I mean, my publisher might be bothered because they spent some money on it, but I'm not going to get an extra jewel in my crown when I go to heaven because this book did well. I don't think that Christ has done it, and I just rest in that. So that's what I'm saying.
You mentioned the word abide a couple times, and I've heard this preached about, and it is one of my favorite words in the Bible. But for maybe those that are listening, that they hear that word and they know it, they know the word kind of on its surface level. Can you explain just sort of like what it really means to abide in Jesus, like what that word really means? Can you go a little bit deeper into that?
I mean, I really wish I could do justice to that word. I'm sure there are spiritual depths which I'm not even going to remotely be able to plumb in the answer that I give to that question. You know, I guess when I think of abiding, I think of a contented baby in the arms of its mother. Mm-hmm. And it's just happy to be there, and it has no intention of going anywhere else. Everything that it needs is found in the arms of its mother and in the security of its home. And I think that abiding in Christ has a lot of that kind of language to it, that like it's knowing that this is where I belong. This is where I want to be. This is where I need to be. When I was a kid, I didn't like being in the house loads. So I would often sort of go out and play in the streets, or play in the local woods, or go out with my friends. And it wasn't, I had a particularly bad home life. I just didn't want to be home. I wanted to be out and about. I think that when you truly know who you have in Christ and what he's done for you, you don't really want to go anywhere else. And so it's almost like, well, if I'm going to do anything, I need to do it from a place of staying with Jesus rather than like going and doing things for Jesus. Like, you know, I'll spend some time with him. He can feed me. He can love me. He can bless me. And then I'll crack on and do my own thing without him, and then come back and tell him how it went. I think abiding is like saying, I don't really want to do anything without you, Jesus. And so you're home. You're where I belong. And so whatever I do has got to be from this place of like, I'm staying here with you. Albeit by the Holy Spirit now, you know, Christ in person isn't with us, but he has said he's with us always to the end of the age, and he keeps that promise through the abiding presence of the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, that's good. Did you have a specific demographic in mind as you were writing this, or was it just to anybody that's feeling burnout? I mean, I know like we were speaking before we recorded, my generation, millennials, the one behind me, Gen Z, we are feeling an especially large sense of burnout because a lot of us have two, sometimes three jobs here in the United States. A lot of times that extra income is not really moving the needle for us to do what we want to do. It's just very difficult for us. And this is something that Adam and I talked about too. It's just very difficult to get into the housing market or to save money or to do anything that we feel like we should be doing right now at this stage of life, like our parents did. And it's just, I think you mentioned this before we recorded too, it's a different world than what our parents lived in. And it's difficult. And I know like people are telling us to work harder, and I'm like, well, a lot of us have two or three jobs working 50, 60 hours a week. That's a lot. That's why we feel burnt out. And we feel like that money's not going anywhere. It's not moving the needle at all. So I know this is especially pertinent to my generation, but did you have anybody or any group of people in mind as you were writing this?
I mean, just exhausted Christians, mate, or even exhausted people, because some people might not even have a Christian kind of, you know, perspective on exhaustion and, like, you know, what's the point of like doing the rat race and, you know, wearing yourself out.
Right.
But like generally, I just wanted to, I wanted to sound like a friend to anybody who was knackered. I don't know if the word knackered translates to Americans, but like exhausted, do you know what I mean? Like, I just wanted to be that to people, whether that's young people or older people. I think that one thing which I think has come out of the pandemic, this might not be your experience in the States, it'll be my experience here in the UK a little bit. I think that coming out of the other side, young people, and especially I think millennials and Gen Z, or Gen Z as you call it, they're looking for authenticity. a lot more than they're looking for like pat answers and sort of like people who they can aspire to be like. I think there's just a real desire for authenticity. You know, who can show us a better way? Who, you know, who's legit? Who's actually got something to say, which is worth listening to? And I think that's working its way out in all sorts of different ways in society. But certainly, I wanted it to be an authentic book. You know, I wasn't suicidal. I wasn't, you know, driven to addiction. My marriage didn't fall apart. I didn't have, you know, one of the things I didn't have was massive financial issues in the midst of it all. So like, I'm not pretending that it was worse than it was.
Right.
So I'm just trying to be authentic. I just got to a point where I just didn't want to be here anymore. And I just didn't know what the point of my existence was anymore if I had nothing left to offer. And I just wanted that. And anybody who, you know, appreciates an authentic story, I hope would get something out of the book. And increasingly people want that. They want someone authentic rather than somebody kind of, you know, inspirational that they can try to be like.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think when you're in that, when you're in those moments, my experience has been, you have nothing left in the tank. So you don't really have much to function on your own, but you don't really have much left to give to other people. So I noticed, you know, for me, I don't have as much as I'd like to give to my wife energy wise. I don't have as much to give to my friends or my family energy wise. And then ultimately I feel like I don't have any energy to give to God, and I don't have time. It's not that I don't have time. It's just that I don't have the mental strength or the mental energy to sit down and, you know, read my Bible or journal or talk with the Lord. And like, I know that sounds like such a lame excuse, but whenever I felt incredibly exhausted, what's the word you use? Knackered? Is that the word? When I felt like that, it has affected my relationship with God. And so could you speak on that, just about what sort of the, I don't want to say dangers or pitfalls, but just what are some of the repercussions when we're in those kind of burnt out stages where it probably does affect relationships, but more importantly, how can it affect our relationship with God, and how can we guard against, whenever we do get into these seasons, how can we guard against that? Because I would argue that as Christians, like, that's who we need to be going to the most, obviously. And that's something that we need to protect no matter what's going on in our lives, that relationship with God and that communication. But can you speak to just that's a real thing that people probably feel like, well, I'm just burnt out. I just want to go to sleep. You know, I don't want to do anything. So what's sort of the guardrails that they can put up whenever they start to feel or experiencing this burnout about, hey, I want to make sure that I still preserve these important relationships?
Yeah, that's a great question. For pretty much my entire Christian life, my favorite book of the Bible has been the Book of Psalms. I'm a very emotional person as a Welshman. Welsh people are generally known for being like, you know, they wear their heart on their sleeve, very up and down, like the opposite of stoic, basically. And that's why I like the Book of Psalms, because it seems to be a psalm for every season of the soul. But I think, you know, in recent years, it's really been helpful to be able to go to the Psalms and realize how many of those psalms were written from a place of need and a place of hardship and a place of fighting for sanity and fighting to see God in the midst of darkness or bleakness or brokenness. And I think that I found the Psalms incredibly helpful. And the Psalms have led me to other scriptures that have similar themes, I guess. And you realize all of a sudden that the Bible's not a book for sorted people. And as much as we want to have nice, clean, quiet times and like perfect devotions, and we want to tick the right boxes, sometimes, you know, just a simple prayer like, God have mercy on me, a sinner, which we get from the Gospels, or you know, Psalm 71 verse 1, make haste, O God, to deliver me. O Lord, make haste to help me. These simple prayers that are heart cries from desperate people for God to draw near. I mean, I don't know if you read Psalm 88 recently. I kind of love Psalm 88 for two reasons. One is because it's written by He-Man. I thought He-Man was like one of the masters of the universe in a cartoon show when I grew up. Apparently he was writing Psalms long before he was one of the masters of the universe. And He-Man's Psalm is basically the bleakest chapter in the whole Bible. And it's just, you know, that's, you know, Simon and Garfunkel have got that lyric, haven't they? Hello, darkness, my old friend. Yeah. They completely ripped that off from Psalm 88, where in Psalm 88 it says, darkness has become my closest companion. Like, so, you know, I love Psalm 88 because of the bleakness of it. And I could, and, you know, yeah, from what I've been recently, I can relate to that. But I studied it with a friend about a year or so ago. And I said, there's nothing positive in this psalm apart from the dude is still praying. Like, the only thing that in this psalm that makes me think there's any hope for He-Man is he's saying, God, I'm crying out to you. I'm still crying out to you. Yeah. Everything's dark. I got no answers. Where the heck are you? But I'm still praying to you. And just the fact that even if your desire is to cry out to God, you still got a spiritual pulse, that in itself should be encouraging.
Yeah.
And so Psalm 88 has become my all-time favorite psalm, at least over the last, you know, 12 or 24 months, because I love the fact he, like, the guy can't even see God, but he's still talking to him, going, I know you're there. I know you're there somewhere.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I love that perspective. That's something very, very similar to our pastor here at our church. I went to see him. This is before we were living here where I live in Kentucky. My wife was living here at the time, and we were going to that church whenever I visit her. But I've told this story on this podcast quite a few times, but I had a pastor of mine who was killed by a drunk driver back in 2016. He was a worship pastor, and that was the period of my life where I first just felt like, I don't know why I don't want to be here. Like, why am I going to this basketball game? It doesn't matter. I was just having all of these thoughts of like, whatever I'm doing doesn't matter. And that was less burnout and more like just very bleak, like teetering on like depressive thoughts. But yeah, one thing that he said was, you know, have you, cause I asked, you know, I was just like, why did God allow this to happen? Why would God take this man who gave his whole life to serving him? Why would he take him away at this early age? I mean, he was killed along with his 16-year-old daughter and his mother in the car. And I'm like, why would God allow this tragedy to happen? And, you know, I was angry and I was upset. And one thing that my pastor said, and he has always said this to people when they are angry at God, and he said, have you ever been angry at a unicorn? And we're like, well, no. And he's like, okay, so like the good thing is like you never have doubted that God exists, because you wouldn't be mad at something that doesn't exist. And so I think what Psalm 88 is saying is like, yeah, life is bad, but I recognize that you're still in control over it. And that has been that's just been the mentality that I've tried to take on. Cause, you know, I've had people that have asked me like, why does X, Y, and Z happen? Why would God, like people that, you know, they're not as mature in their faith, or they're not Christians, asking, you know, why would God allow this to happen? And frankly, like, I don't have any answers. I mean, I'm not like a theologian or anything, but I just am kind of like, look, I don't understand God's ways. I'm not meant to understand God's ways. I don't know if you're familiar with Barnabas Piper. He's the son of John Piper. So Barnabas has been on the show a few times, and he wrote a book called Help My Unbelief. I've referenced this on this show quite a few times as well. But one of the sayings in his book is, we are finite beings trying to understand an infinite God. We're not meant to understand everything about God. And that gave me a lot of freedom to be like, I wish that I knew why things happened, but I also was not created in such a way to understand fully. And so Psalm 88, that perspective on Psalm 88 is perfect.
Yeah. And I think that like God is God, and there needs to be mystery to worship God.
Absolutely.
Some of that mystery is dark, you know, not dark, sinful dark. Dark as in we just don't have the answers.
Right.
Like, you know, I'd like to have every blank filled in. There's no sin in God, and there's no malice in him. You know, he's not cruel, but I don't understand everything either. Like there's a beautiful scripture, isn't there, in Isaiah, that where God says, my ways are higher than your ways, my thoughts are higher than your thoughts. And I think it's not nice. You know, I want to know everything. I want to understand everything. But he's like, no, actually, you're not going to get it all, because my thoughts are higher than your thoughts. Yeah. So, but I just love that. You know, I just love the Psalms for that language. I found fresh mercy and fresh grace in a lot of those Psalms, because they just speak raw language from raw places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's perfect. That was whenever I had the first idea to write a book, it was going to be about that season where that person that I mentioned was killed. And it was going to be about how I wanted all the answers. I'm a journalist by trade. And so my natural instinct is to search for answers and to investigate. And it was like, well, how can I be certain about something that feels so uncertain? And so that was really what kind of led me on the path to wanting to write a book and just really dive deeper in my faith. And so that season was actually, I think, the impetus for me growing deeper in my faith, because I think whenever you go through something like that, you can go one of two ways. You can go completely the opposite, where you can deconstruct your faith, which is something that we're talking about in our young adult ministry at our church right now. How do we reconstruct our faith in a world that's, you know, talking so much about deconstruction? But, or you can take it and go, and you can grow closer to God. And that was what I did, is I took my questions and my investigation, quote unquote, and allowed it for me to dive deeper and understand God even more. So I don't know if you had I mean, you're a pastor, so you've been studying the Word of God for, you know, your vocation for, I don't know how long, but what was it that whenever you were going through that burnout season, I mean, was that part of your rhythm, was just like, I've got to make sure I'm in the Word every day? I mean, how did you kind of get out of it rhythm wise? And how did you maintain, how did you live like that Psalm 88, where you were still calling out to God?
Yeah, that's a great question. Quite a few months, I would say, is a bit of a fog. I can't actually remember.
Right.
I have a very simple faith because I'm a very simple person. I'm genuinely, I mean, although I've written a book, like those who read it will know, I'm not trained to write. I'm not an academic person. I'm a communicator, but I'm not academic. And so I'm not very good at reading reams of, you know, scripture. So my way of studying the Bible since I got saved at the age of 15, which is like 31 years ago, is to just read one chapter of the Bible every day from Genesis to Revelation on loop, and then rinse and repeat. I just finished Revelation just over a week ago, back in Genesis now. So that one chapter a day, every day with a cup of coffee, still remained as part of my routine. I'm a freak for routine. And I'm sure that it was probably better that I did that than I didn't do that. And there were scriptures that did stand out during that season. You know, some of them I sort of like, you know, wrote poems around them, or I kind of like, you know, would have meditated on them more than others. Some of those come out in Hopewood in the book. You know, some of those truths have been really helpful. 2 Corinthians has been really helpful. 2 Corinthians, which just speaks a lot about, you know, us being broken pots, you know, jars of clay, and you know, Paul's thorn, and you know, my grace is sufficient for you. Those sorts of thoughts, I found 2 Corinthians incredibly helpful. But I can't say that I had this kind of like, you know, crisis where I stopped reading the Bible. But I also haven't got any standout moments where it's like that was the moment where, you know, the lights came on. I often say with like personal study, and also with even Sunday sermons, that I can't remember 99.9% of the meals that my mother prepared for me as a child. I'm just really glad that I ate them, because, you know, the job wasn't for every one of those meals to be memorable. It was just really important that I ate them. Right. And I think that, you know, I'd probably say that I came through it in better shape because I was still in that rhythm of reading the scriptures every day. Certainly some scriptures came more alive because of what I was going through, and I didn't have a crisis of faith, as in I didn't doubt God. I didn't even doubt God's goodness. I just doubted my own sanity and doubted my own usefulness to the world. You know, I was quite happy that God was still on the throne. He was still good and glorious. I was just done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, but there were certain scriptures that, you know, and in fact, loads of scriptures are about us meeting God in that place. You know,
yeah.
He lifts the needy from the ash heap, you know. I just think that in ministry, we often think that we're meant to be like the Good Samaritan who crosses the road to help other people. And it's like, no, you're the guy that's like almost dead in the gutter. That's who you are. That's your role.
Yeah.
You're the got to let somebody who you were enemies with come and save you. That's Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, and so much scripture is that it's just, you know, reaffirming that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I do appreciate your authenticity there, where it's like, yeah, I mean, I never doubted God. I just was, that was done personally. And yeah. I know, like, part of this, I would imagine, is dealing with rest and how to rest well. Do you have a specific Sabbath routine? And if so, just kind of like whenever you are feeling burnt out, I mean, what does that look like for you? Do you protect your Sabbath? I know that I try to. I'm not always very good at it. Like this Sunday, I was like, I am just going to sit home and watch football. That's going to be my Sabbath. I'm just going to do that. But I mean, how important is it just to rest in general? And then do you have some sort of a Sabbath rhythm?
Yeah, that's great questions. I mean, and I totally vibe with what you're saying about you try and protect your Sabbath.
Yeah, yeah, I try.
Yeah, you know, the try in italics. Yeah, so certainly during, I think part of the problem with lockdown life is that on the one hand, we weren't doing loads because we were all stuck at home. But when I got four kids and a wife, and we had a lodger at the time as well. And, you know, a dog, and now got two dogs. You know, it wasn't restful in that sense. You know, it wasn't like quiet space. It was like a whole household trying to make sense of a really difficult situation, you know, with varying degrees of success and failure, you know. And so during COVID, when all this kind of kicked off, Sabbath wasn't very easy. And certainly I'm a extrovert person. And so not being able to meet with my brothers and sisters and preaching to a camera was just the worst thing ever. Like, I hated it. And I, you know, that wasn't life giving; that was life sucking. Interestingly, as well, you know, and so I mean, actually, I'll answer the other part of the question. Then I'll do my interestingly as well. But I do have rhythms that I try and keep. A cup of coffee with my wife once a week is a real important, you know, moment. Just going out, making sure we're, you know, okay with each other on page with regards to our weekly, you know, commitments and sharing encouragements from the scriptures and praying with each other. That's always my favorite, to be honest with you, it's my favorite time of the week. And when those seasons are challenged for whatever reason, that it's always harder that not to spend time with her. She's my favorite human. So that's, you know, always precious. I live in the inner city. There's not a lot of beautiful creation around me like there used to be where I used to live in the valleys in South Wales. And so I try and get out with the dog to walk to my local park, but it's still a park surrounded by crime and concrete. And so it's not the most life-giving space I could go to. So try and get out into creation a bit more when I can, but that's been harder of late. I like going to coffee shops. I now run a coffee shop as well in my spare time. And so, like, you know, coffee is always, you know, a part of, you know, the kind of life-giving things that I do. But interestingly, one of the things that I actually did when I was coming out of this season of burnout, and I thought I probably need to get some help, not just kind of pastoral help, but like some, you know, medical help. It's transpired with me currently being under assessment for ADHD that, like, you know, I have a crazy wild brain. Like I have many jobs, or I've always done a lot of things, had loads of plates spinning. I've always been able to keep those plates spinning. You know, and so I have 100 ideas before breakfast, and, you know, I need people to help me work out what I should and shouldn't do. And I've always got dreams and visions and ideas and stuff which I want to be doing, and that's part of who I am. And it's not a bad thing, it's a God thing, it's how I function. But I think that what's happened as I've got older, maybe this is a middle age thing, I've got horrendous arthritis now from all skateboarding injuries. You know, I can't jog or run at all. Walking hurts. So I've just slowed down a lot physically, but my mind hasn't slowed down. And there's a degree to which there may be that, you know, I'm having to learn to stop physically, but I can't stop mentally and emotionally. And that's been that's an ongoing challenge, to be honest with you, trying to find things that I can do, you know, when I can't switch my brain off. And I still, to this day, haven't found a way of effectively switching my brain off. And so, yeah, it's a challenge. And, you know, I don't know how well I'm certainly doing a lot better, and you know, but there's still a lot of question marks really over what's a healthy rhythm for me as I get more middle age and try and make sense of all that. So I don't know if that's a healthy answer or not.
Yeah, no, that's a good answer. Yeah, I'm right there with you. Right, I feel like I've got a million ideas going, and I used to be able to remember them all, and now I've got to, if I have any sort of idea, whether I'm like laying in bed or on a walk or whatever, I have to take a second and get my phone out and jot it down in my notes app. Otherwise I will forget that thought process. And so I don't want to do that. And so, I have to make sure that I'm not, not forgetting everything and stay focused. So I don't know that I'm ADHD. I've never been diagnosed with that, but I do feel like I have a lot of ideas, and I'm like, I have been trying very recently to, if I'm in the middle of a task, to not get distracted from that task and not let myself move on or multitask, because I've noticed I just don't do things very well whenever I do that. So
and I think for me, the way that kind of works out though, so my mind has never switched off, but I've always had a physical outlet. And so if I've been stressed or things have been worrying me or troubling me, I've gone out for a run or a bike ride or a swim or whatever, and I've skated back in the day, But because I haven't had that same physical outlet, and you know, doing things physically genuinely is, you know, painful now, I think that when my mind is spinning in a creative way, it's really good, and a lot of good stuff comes out of it. But if my mind starts spinning in a negative way, I realize that it's a very, very short drop from like being okay to feeling really overwhelmed by despair. And that's kind of where I think the kind of challenge has, you know, that's probably what happened during that season of burnout. I ended up in a place where, and I just had no control over my thoughts by that point. You know, I was just completely overwhelmed by, you know, despair, really. Yeah. But now I've learned that about myself. I think I and those who are around me are probably a lot quicker to say, "Di, it's okay." Like, you know, how you're feeling right now isn't ultimate. It's not actually, you know, and you know that tomorrow morning you probably feel better. So just don't let yourself go down that path. And you know, so my wife especially is really good at just helping me to sort of like gather my thoughts before they start spiraling too badly. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's good. Well, you may have mentioned some of these earlier, but the name of the show is In No Hurry. So I always like to ask people, when you're just feeling super crazy busy, what's your go-to restful activity right now? What are you doing? Is it walking with the dogs? Is it other things with your family? Just what's your go-to activity right now?
Can I give you three?
Sure.
I love watching sort of like Marvel and Star Wars episodes with my son, my eldest son. We're currently going through Ahsoka, as I'm sure most of the Western world is. So like, you know, just chilling with my son and my dog on the sofa. I got two sons, and one of them is like starting to get into it as well. So hopefully he'll be joining the party soon. So that's really restful for me. I mentioned earlier going out for a coffee with my wife, but just coffee shops generally, man. I just love sitting down with a coffee and just breathing out and taking a good book. You know, I can't read loads, but it's helpful to read something.
Yeah.
So like reading would be another one.
Yeah.
And just being near, if I can describe it this way, epic creation. Like I know all creation is epic. I know that like, you know, sewer rats are probably epic in their own way, but not that kind of creation. I'm talking oceans, mountains, you know, big forests, waterfalls, blanket stars, you know, those sorts of things. That's life-giving, you know, where you're confronted by creation, which reminds you how small you are and how gigantic God is, and which almost centers you a little bit. That would be another thing I like to do as well.
Yeah, that's great.
I probably should have said that one before Ahsoka, to be honest with you.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I'm right there with you with creation. We live here in Kentucky, and there's quite a few places in Nashville and in Tennessee close to us. That are so beautiful. And Mammoth Cave, which is the largest cave system in the world, is just up the road, 20 minutes or so. So yeah, I love getting out there whenever we can. And here it's about to be really pretty. I'm looking out at the trees and it's about to get really pretty here with the leaves changing. So looking forward to that. So people can buy this book at the Good Book Company, anywhere books are sold, I assume. Where can people connect with you if they want to?
Yeah, so I'm hanging on to social media by a thread. Like, you know, the only thing I've got now is Twitter. I refuse to call it X.
I refuse to call it X too. That's so stupid.
It will forever be Twitter. And so I don't post to X. I tweet on Twitter at Dihankey, Dihankey. That's pretty much the only place you can find me on social media. And as I say, that's hanging on by a thread. I do wonder if social media is part of the problem that the whole world is, you know, the whole Western world is dealing with. And I wonder if, you know, I didn't have coffee to sell and books to plug with, if it wouldn't be helpful for me just to get the heck off social media completely and become a hermit. But while I'm not a complete technophobic hermit, you can find me at Dihankey on Twitter. Or you can, you know, if anybody wants to drop me an email, you just put the @ on the other end of Dihankey and put gmail.com after it. And that's my email address.
Okay, perfect. Simple enough. All right. Well, Di, it was great talking with you about this book, Hopeward, Gospel, Grace for Weary Souls. I encourage all the listeners to check it out. Thanks again for joining me. This is a great conversation.
It's been great, man. Thanks for having me. Cheers.
Isn't he such a cool guy? I feel like I just want to sit down and grab a beer with him in Wales or something. Man, he was awesome. I'm so excited for his book. I'm so excited for you guys to get it. If you want to check it out anywhere you get books, Barnes & Noble, The Good Book Company, anywhere will have this. Hopeward, Gospel, Grace for Weary Souls is the name of the book. Hope you guys enjoyed hearing from Dai. I just appreciate his authentic, genuine approach. He just is a regular guy who, obviously, he's a pastor and he's a church planter and he's done all kinds of great things in the faith. But he also was just like, yeah, I struggled with this and I just kind of felt done. And I think that's how we all felt to some degree during COVID and have all felt at some point. I mean, we talked about it last week. I think that this idea of burnout is just so prevalent, especially among Gen Z and millennials. And I think just anybody really deals with it, but it's especially prevalent. I know within my generation, I just see it all over. People just working so much and just feeling like they can't even afford to take time away from work because they just got to always be making money. Otherwise, they can't catch up and do the things they want to do. And man, it is just so exhausting. So this book I know is going to help a lot of people. I am also doing a giveaway of this book. If you missed the giveaway for Adam Ramsey's book, Faithfully Present, stay tuned on my social media for a giveaway of this book, Hope Word. I would love to get this in your hands if you are wanting this, so be sure to check that out. You will need to be following me on Instagram to find that. So I'm just at Cole Claiborne on Instagram. You can also find me on Twitter at Cole Claiborne or whatever it's called now, X. I refuse to call it that. It's Twitter. But also Facebook, you can find me at Cole Douglas Claiborne. Website is coleclaiborne.com and also the Substack newsletter. In the show notes, you can find all of that there. I would love to connect with you on some platform, whatever your preferred social media platform is. Well, I know here in Kentucky where we live, it is fall break for the schools. So if you're traveling, you're having some time off, maybe your kids are also on fall break, enjoy this week, enjoy some time away. Highly recommend, even if it's a short vacation, get away, take some time, just do something that you like. And even if it's for a day, just get outside, do something. We're getting into the fall weather, which is phenomenal. So thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you guys have a great week. And I really do hope you find some time to relax and not be in a hurry. And we'll catch you next time.